go away and think about it, make sure this feels right for you, and then come back and tell me what you want to do. I don't want you or need you to make a decision here and now. I want to make sure that you're engaging in this process from a place of, yes, this is the person that I feel comfortable doing this with.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today, we have Nicole all the way from London on our show. How are you, Nicole?
Hey, Brad. I'm really good. Thanks. How are you doing?
I am awesome, as usual. So this is a really, really cool topic we're going to talk about today, because I always wanted to serve kids in some capacity, and you're doing that now. So I'm a little jealous and want to hear so much more about this. So let's just jump right in. I know that when we talked earlier, you talked about that you work exclusively and extensively with teenagers, and you help them navigate anxiety and overwhelm. Can you share insights into the importance of nurturing a positive relationship with oneself and how it relates to those challenges?
Yeah, sure. I don't work exclusively with teenagers and young people, but that is my kind of passion area, if you like.
Extensively. I should have said extensively.
Okay. So the importance of nurturing a positive relationship with oneself. Really, I think that is the basis of strong foundations in life, a positive relationship with ourselves. And I've listened to some of your other podcasts, and I know you've talked about this extensively with other people as well. But really, what I've learned over the years through my own journey, through working with however many people I've worked with now in the capacity as a hypnotherapist and a coach, but also I used to be a teacher. So working in the world of education as well. And you see, just in general, how hard people are on themselves in life. And we learn to put ourselves down. We kind of learn from the world around us. I don't know about in the States, but in England, especially when I was growing up, and I think until recent years, you're never supposed to lift yourself up. You were never supposed to talk well about yourself. You were never supposed to be kind of positive, because it came across as arrogant. And you were very much kind of put down by your peers if you were like, oh, I'm really good at that, or oh, I did that really well, or something like that. So there was a lot of stigma around you being kind to yourself, right? So I don't know if you have that same sort of culture in the States, but in England, it was very kind of prominent.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, we do. Why do you think people do that? Why do you think people talk to put themselves down and talk negatively to themselves?
Like I say, I think in the UK, there's always been a kind of cultural thing around, oh, you know, you kind of make fun of yourself. And in that sense, you put yourself down and hee hee ha ha type. And like I say, there's another aspect of, if you do big yourself up, you're arrogant, and it comes across as arrogant. So people kind of, oh no, it's really off-putting because that person really loves themselves or something like that. I mean, things have changed now, and I think things are changing more and more. But in terms of nurturing a positive relationship with ourselves, it's that inner dialogue. And if you're constantly putting yourself down and you're constantly telling yourself how rubbish you are at something, or that you're, I don't know, you don't look good, or you don't come across well, or all of these things, all of this dialogue that we have going on in our heads, it's like, if you have a best friend, a friend, let's say, that's constantly putting you down, hopefully you're not going to maintain that relationship for very long, because every time you're with that person, you're like, oh, I feel horrible. So you kind of start creating distance and moving away from that relationship. Well, it's the same thing. We're with ourselves 24 hours a day. We're with no one else as much time as we are with ourselves, not our parents, not our siblings, not our partners, not our children, not our best friends. So it's so important that we cultivate that kind of positive relationship with ourselves, because it's the only one, and it's the most intimate and the most important relationship we're ever going to have in our entire lives.
So tell us how, like, Janie comes to you with anxiety. What do you do? What are your techniques? And what can you recommend someone listening who is either a teenager listening to this or a parent that has a teenager? How do you help them?
Well, that's a big question. How do you help them? I have a lot of tools. I've done a lot of different trainings over the years, and I'm constantly doing trainings. I've started a master's recently as well in applied positive psychology and coaching psychology. So I'm constantly learning new things and new ways of helping people. So a teenager comes with anxiety, which is usually coupled with low self-esteem and lack of confidence and things around that. And really, it's about finding out what's going on with them. What's the story? Where is this coming from? And helping them change that framework, let's say. And I know you've had previous guests and we're talking about reprogramming and changing our kind of subconscious programming and things like that. And also, for me, that's coupled with giving people tools, especially young people, giving them tools that they can take away, share with their friends, right? I've had loads of young people come to me, oh yeah, no, I was teaching that to my friends. And then we started doing some other stuff. And then we went down this rabbit hole and we found out about breath work and we started doing that together. So these tools that I kind of teach them that they can go away with, they end up having like a positive knock-on effect with their peers as well, if they've got that kind of environment and that relationship that they can share the work that they're doing with their peers, with their siblings. So I don't know that actually answered your questions in terms of what I do with them.
Well, you said you provided tools. So tell me like one of your most powerful one or two tools that if all the other ones were taken away and you can only use two, what would those two tools be?
Oh, okay. So one of them is guided meditations. I do a lot of that work with young people in terms of helping them connect with themselves and understand themselves. One of the reasons I do that, I think emotions are complex things, right? And I think most human beings, adults especially, we still don't understand our emotions, right? Most people from a very young age are being told, don't laugh, don't cry, don't be jealous, don't be angry. This is not an appropriate moment to smile or be happy or whatever it is. We're constantly being told that our emotions, our responses, our reactions are wrong for some reason by societal, cultural standards in whatever situation. So what happens? Most of us, we learn to kind of push these things down. We learn to not feel those things because it's not appropriate in that moment. So as we grow up, this is my kind of analogy, most people are walking around with like a pressure cooker inside of them, okay? And this pressure cooker, it's got all of this pressure building up and the steam just gets let off in random directions at random people, mostly at people, our partners or whoever it is, people that don't really deserve it because it's not about them. It's about all of these emotions that we don't understand and we haven't learned how to process. Again, I'm very aware that things are changing now and kids at school are learning more tools to deal with these things. But teenagers are very much in that process. And kids, teenagers, they don't understand emotions. They don't have the words really to express them. So one of the most powerful tools that I can give anyone, especially a young person, is take a moment, connect with the sensation. What's going on inside of you? Where are you feeling it? What color is it? What does it look like? Does it have a texture? Do we need to give it a voice? Let's get it out there. Let's find out what it wants to say, what it's trying to tell you, what the message is. Whether we do that verbally, whether we do that through drawing, whether we do it through, I don't know, movement, however we need to do that, getting them to connect with themselves and understand, start to make sense of this response that feels like it's so out of control.
Yeah. So those would be the two, is guided meditation. The second is just like identifying and feeling what's going on in your body.
Yeah. Those are two tools. I don't know that if I could sort of get rid of everything else because everything is relevant in the moment with that particular person. But yeah, those are two kind of big things that I use.
And if those children don't do the work that you are providing to them, they end up as an adult. And I take on clients all the time who, when I ask them about their emotions, they're like, well, I'm not feeling anything and I can't tell you what I'm feeling. It's because you said earlier that they've lost connection with themselves. They've typically gone through something stressful in their childhood. And it doesn't have to be something outrageous. It can be something small. They disconnect and it's painful. So they literally don't know how to deal with their emotions because they either stuff them down or just completely disconnect. And you and I know that actually is okay as a very young child because it helps you get through that stressful time. But as an adult, it can wreck your health and your relationships and pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure you've seen it time and time again with your clients the same way that I have. Not even just with clients, right? But everyday people.
So one thing you said to me when we talked a week ago or so that really just floored me, it's very unique. And that is that your approach is not always involving parents in the therapy process for teenagers with anxiety. Could you explain your reasoning behind this and how it helps your young clients?
Yeah. So I know other people that work with young people kind of insist on getting parents involved. I think my take on it is I could go down the route of obliging parents to do some sort of therapeutic work with me. But as we know, if you oblige anyone to do something, you're going to come up against resistance. So I would rather work with people that want to engage with, not rather, I only work with people that want to engage with me. I don't take on anyone that's fighting me from the off because there's no point, right? They're not at that point where they want to do the work, they're willing to engage, they're willing to make changes. So it's just a non-starter, really. So in terms of not obliging them to work with me in a therapeutic context, I don't know that I've got a particular rationale around it. I'm working with their child. They are involved in that process. So there'll always be a conversation with the parents and there'll always be kind of regular updates with the parents. If the parents then want to come and do some work with me, then that's great. Then we can do that work. When I say child, I don't work with anybody under kind of 15 or 16. So I don't work with young children. And also a part of that is kind of when they're 15, 16, they're mature enough. They have to be mature enough to engage in this process. If they're not mature enough, then again, I won't take them on as a client. And I think this is like a protected space for them. It's a protected relationship for them. So in a sense, it's helping them feel more ownership over the relationship and over their process, rather than saying, okay, well, I'm going to be working with mum and dad as well, or mum and dad are going to be involved in these sessions with us. And I think that takes away the autonomy and the sense of confidentiality and ownership from the young person.
Do you often find that the parents have a role to play in the child's anxiety?
Always.
Always.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you have a child with anxiety and you're like, why do they have anxiety? You just have to go look in the bathroom mirror, grab your spouse if you have one, and just go look in the mirror. You're the cause. And that's not to indict you, because both of my kids had anxiety based on my lack of connection and my lack of self-love. So it's not your fault. It was something that you probably went through as a child, and you went through as a child because your grandparents went through it and your great-grandparents. And we just keep passing this down. So Nicole, it makes a lot of sense now, because for some reason I was thinking like an 8-year-old. Let me ask a hypothetical question. If you were to work with an 8-year-old or 9-year-old, would you then have to involve the parents? I mean, involve as in, if you're the cause of this, I've got to help you heal your pain if you want your 8-year-old to get better.
Look, there's definitely an argument for it. Absolutely. There's definitely an argument for it. Like I say, I don't work with kids that young.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult question for me to answer, but I can absolutely see why there's a strong case for it. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because at 15, you're right. Like my daughter's 16 and she probably has a maturity of like a 18 or 19 year old. Most of her friends are a couple years older. How many of the percentage wise, just rough, like of the 15, 16, 17 year olds that you're working with, when you start to work with them, their parents are like, whoa, I do have some work to do. And then they end up doing some work. Is it a smaller amount or a larger amount?
It's definitely a smaller amount. It's definitely a smaller amount. It's hard for people to look at themselves and take, I think responsibility is a big word here, maybe, but it is hard for people to look at themselves and say, oh, something I'm doing is creating my kid to suffer. And that's a tough pill to swallow for people.
I've never thought about this, but if the old Brad from 3 years ago, this is the 2.0 version of Brad, but the old version, if you'd have come to me and said, your kids have anxiety because of you, I don't know what I would have done. I might have fired you. I'd have been like, you don't know what you're talking about. What do I have to do with it? Maybe their mom, because she's got her issues. But me, I'm a great dad. I'm there all the time. So yeah, I can understand why a lot of parents would be like, no, it's not me. But you and I know from working and our mentors working with thousands and thousands of people that you always have to look to the caregiver or the parent if the child has anxiety or depression. And so good stuff. So how did you get into this? What led you into this life and helping these teenagers?
All right. So like I said, I used to work in education. I've worked in lots of different areas in education, teaching. I used to run summer schools for international students. I've been a teacher trainer, all sorts of things. And I was always a bit of a rebel teacher. I was the one who's like, yeah, just chuck the book out the window. We're going to do something more meaningful today. My backstory really is that I was a very unhappy teenager. And again, when I was growing up, mental health was very stigmatized and not something that you talked about. It was not something that was openly talked about. And if you were suffering with depression or something like that, it was more like, okay, you might need to go to a kind of, what's the correct word? Like a mental health facility. I don't even know if that's the right way
to. Mental hospital?
Yeah, exactly. So I went through my own struggles very much so as a teenager and felt very isolated and very alone and didn't feel like I could talk to anyone really. And I remember going to a couple of, I can't remember if they were psychologists or psychiatrists or whatever at the time, probably a psychologist or a counselor. And I remember particularly one session sitting there and this woman said nothing to me like the whole time. I was 16. I was in this terrible place and she said nothing to me the whole time. She was literally just sitting there waiting for me to say something. And I was, this is a load of BS. Like, why? What makes you think? I know you from nothing. What makes you think that I should just walk in here and trust you with my deepest, darkest pain? And I walked out of the session. I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that again. And I had a couple of experiences like that. And really, I also had health issues. And it was kind of around then that I decided, when I grow up, I want to help young people. I want to be a person that young people feel that they can trust, feel that they can open up to, feel that they can approach if they have a problem and not be judged for it and not be told, oh, it's just because you're a teenager and your hormones are all over the place, or all of those stereotypical things that are so unhelpful when somebody's struggling, that we kind of box teenagers into this corner of hormones or this, that, and the other. And it's a difficult time in life.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, awesome stuff. So can you talk a little bit more about, I kept you to two tools before, but actually, let me ask this question a different way. If someone's listening to this and they have a child that has overwhelm and anxiety, what's the first couple steps that the parent could or should take?
Well, first of all, talk to your child. Really, they need to talk to their child. And I know that can be more difficult, I think, than it seems, but creating a space where there's no judgment and also not, kind of overwhelming your child even more. Sometimes too much, oh, are you okay? And kind of tiptoeing around it can also make the situation a little bit worse. So it is difficult to find the right space and the right tone to approach your child, but keeping the conversation open is really important. Asking them, how are you feeling? Do you want to talk about it? How can I help is a good question. What do you need today? Or do you need anything specific from me today? Can I help you in a particular way today? Can I support you or something like that? Obviously, if you feel, speak to your child about getting some support from somebody and maybe ask them what kind of support they think they need. You've obviously got doctors that you can go and see to get support. You've got people like you and I who work in a different way. You've got to find the right avenue as well. Do your research. And before kind of jumping into working with somebody, make sure that you're having a conversation with them. Make sure that your child is meeting that person as well and feels comfortable with that person. I always speak to the parents first and then speak to the child. And at the end of a consultation, and most business people will tell me that I'm crazy for doing this, but at the end of a consultation, I will always say to the young person, the client, go away and think about it. Make sure this feels right for you. And then come back and tell me what you want to do. I don't want you or need you to make a decision here and now. I don't need you to pull your credit card out here and now. I want to make sure that you're engaging in this process from a place of, yes, this is the person that I feel comfortable doing this with.
Wow, that's awesome. Really awesome. So could you share with us a success story or an example of how this approach has transformed a young client's life despite the anxiety and the challenges they were facing?
Yeah, I've got one particular person in mind, a 16-year-old whose family situation was really messy, really, really messy. And I remember at the time, this person was getting in fights at school, had been excluded from another school, was kind of getting into loads of conflicts with teachers and telling them to go to different places and was constantly getting into trouble at school. And as I was started working with this person and kind of the family situation was becoming clearer and clearer, I was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to help this person? Because at the end of the day, they come away from me and they go right back into the middle of this show and this situation. And I do remember thinking, how am I going to help this person? What are we looking to do here, really? And the analogy that really came to my mind was, okay, so this person is going back into their family environment, and it's almost like they're standing in the middle of a tornado. And the tornado is the family and all of the craziness that's happening around them that's completely out of their control. So what can I do to help this person thrive, let's say, in the middle of a tornado? Well, yeah. I can help them build the resilience, the skills, and have the tools to stay calm and grounded despite all of that stuff going on around them. And we did that work. And by the end of the time that we'd finished working together, this person was walking around. I mean, started off with a hood up all the time, headphones in, looking down, very, very tall person, shoulders kind of down like that. By the end of it, there was no hood, standing up straight, shoulders back, confident, looking at people in the eye to speak to them. This was huge. You know, this was a massive change. And by the end of it, was going back into the family environment, cooking for the family, started becoming the good influence in the family and creating moments that they could share, that they could sit down and talk together over a meal because they took up an interest in cooking. So it was an amazing transformation. I can't take, yes, I'm facilitating and helping this person, but the person is the one that's going away and implementing these things and making the changes. So really the credit is down to them.
That's amazing. So did their family improve by the child or the teenager improving?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going back to your original question, not your original, but one of your questions about why not involve the parents. Sometimes it just takes one domino to have a positive effect on other people around them.
Yeah. I don't know who said it, but I love this quote. Pain moves through families until someone's willing to feel it.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And when you have that one brave soul that comes and is like, I'm going to feel it. In my little three-person family now, I raised my hand, although the irony is that this all started because of my son's anxiety that I caused. It's so crazy. I guess a better word is interesting how things work out. So because of the effect my father had on me and how I affected my son and trying to help him, I changed my life. And now I'm helping to change his life and my daughter's and then countless others. So it's just, life is a beautiful thing. You use hypnosis as part of your toolkit. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Why hypnosis?
I love hypnosis. I love hypnosis.
I do too, but I'm going to be like this. I'm going to be like the skeptical guy here. Why hypnosis? Is that like when you're chasing around a mouse on stage?
It's such a powerful tool. It really is such a powerful tool, and it's really empowering. Again, going back to my own experience, I remember being in my sort of late teens, early 20s and having a really, really tough time and thinking, I just want somebody to crack my head open and just rewire it. You know, that was my big sort of desire. And I didn't quite find that ever. I had to do the work myself, which was really hard and a really long road. And then I kind of came across hypnosis again at a challenging time in my life. And the change was phenomenal. It really was. I don't know that it was an overnight thing for me. It was more of a progressive thing for me because I was listening to audios every single day and I was doing all of these different things. But I've seen the power of it. And I think it's a phenomenal experience. And there's so many ways of using it. And there's so many tools within hypnosis. And I'm very intuitive when I work as well. So I'm very much kind of responding to whatever the client is giving me in the moment and can go off in all sorts of amazing places. And there's nothing for me more beautiful than somebody sort of opening their eyes from a hypnotic experience and going, oh my God, that was, you know, I feel different. I feel like I've experienced a different part of myself or a different possible way of being.
I hear over and over and over again at the end of the sessions, man, I feel so much lighter.
Mm.
Tell us what truly makes hypnosis so powerful.
What makes it so powerful? Look, there's so many kind of theories around hypnosis and what it is and what it isn't. Really, for me, when I'm doing trance hypnosis anyway, because you can do trance and non-trance hypnosis, when I'm doing trance hypnosis, there's that sense of kind of inward focus and concentration, but also kind of that what we're doing in theory is bypassing what we call the critical faculty and getting straight to the subconscious mind, where a lot of hypnosis is based around parts work, parts therapy. So the idea being that we have lots of different kind of parts in our mind that are running different patterns of thought, feeling, and behavior. So by kind of lowering the kind of conscious interference, if you like, and being able to get directly to the parts that are doing the patterns of thought, feeling, and behavior that we don't want them to be doing, we can communicate with them directly and say, look, hey, you've been doing a great job until now, but it's no longer in alignment with who this person is and where they want to be going. So how about we find you a different job, get you something else to do, because you've already proven that you're a key player and we need you on the team, but we just need you to do something different.
To give an example, a part could be that a part came up with anxiety because it thought it might be protecting. And so you could say to that part under hypnosis, well, why don't we now reassign that part or just have that part leave altogether? And I think you said this, it's a tapping into the subconscious mind, which controls 95% of our behavior, where I find that hypnosis is just so freaking powerful. One last question, and then we'll ask how people can reach you. Do you find that this 15, 16-year-old age group responds any better or worse to hypnosis than a 35 or 45-year-old adult?
Again, it very much depends on the rapport that you've got with them. As long as they feel safe, as long as they feel that they trust you, there's no reason why they shouldn't be as responsive as anyone else. And really, for me, that's what this is all about. It's all about the client, doesn't matter what age they are. As long as they feel safe and they trust you, they'll be as responsive as they need to be.
Love it. How can people best reach you, Nicole?
I'm moving away from social media at the moment. So my website or email is the best place. My website is nicolemazzucato.com or email info@nicolemazzucato.com.
Would you like to spell that for us really quickly?
Yeah, sure. NicoleMazzucato.com.
And that's info at, right?
Yeah, info at or just the website, yeah.
Well, Nicole, keep doing your amazing work, because when you help teenagers, you help the world. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Brad, and great work with the podcast and everything that you're doing. So yeah, keep it up and congratulations.
Thank you. So that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. If you liked it, please share it. Please get the word out. We'd love to spread this light and joy to others, entrepreneurs and even non-entrepreneurs. So until next time, remember, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.